Hello and welcome to Multiform. Every week we get together to talk about the latest Xbox news, rumors, and the games we've been playing lately. New episodes post every Monday morning, or in this case, Tuesday, due to the New Year's holiday. And you can email the show at questions@multiformpodcast.com. This is episode 228, the first of 2023. Happy New Year. I'm Tim Shelton, and I'm joined this week by Spencer Rain.
Just like the United States government, we too observe New Year's Day on January 2nd.
Well, it's not just the U.S. government. I mean, my workplace observes.
Oh, I know. I wasn't going to go into detail. Yeah, the United States government, the county governments, city governments, most businesses.
Most non-retail businesses, exactly. But even some retail businesses. Like, I tried to go to UPS today to do some returns,
well, and they're closed. Well, I told you that, because they follow the post office schedule, yeah. I'm sure.
And I tried to get my haircut. The haircut place actually was open, but they had a wait of 3 hours. And I'm not going to wait for 3 hours to get my haircut. So...
Well, couldn't you have waited at home or something?
I could have, but it's I have to schedule those kinds of things, like... around when my kids are going to be awake and, you know, hanging out with them and doing things and playing and errands I need to run and other stuff. So I was trying to coordinate a UPS trip, a grocery store trip, and a haircut all into one excursion away from the house. And only one of those three things was possible. So I ended up only going to the grocery store. Had to get some carpet cleaner because I didn't have any. And my dog got sick when she got home. You and I did a bunch of traveling. I was gone, I think, 9 days visiting family across multiple places for the holidays. I've only been home a day, no, 2 days, day and a half, something like that. And you just got back within mere hours ago from a shorter New Year's excursion. I'm surprised how much gaming I got done with all the driving I did. So if you're from a non-US country, obviously driving is way more prevalent in the US than more, urban, European cities, but I drove, 1,500 miles over the holidays over the last 10 days. So I crossed three or four different states. So just a lot of road time and, we'll get into it. Let's go. Before we go to what we've been playing, though, and before we get to any news, which will be, you know, our main things we normally cover in a show. I also, if you can't tell with my voice, I have a little bit of a cough still from over the holidays from, you know, exposure to all the people with germs. But I want to hit a couple things we talked about on the last show of 2022, because Spencer was out for that show, having an early Christmas with some family. And there's two topics that I wanted to run by you, Spencer, just to get your take on. Also, just to put a pin on 2022. The first one is Crystal Dynamics Tomb Raider publishing rights, or not publishing rights, but like the deal they made with Amazon Games. I want to hear your reaction to it. But one thing I want to add to what we talked about 2 weeks ago is I saw a... Spencer, I don't know if you saw this, but I think it was either Forbes or some other publication like that did a biography or like editorial coverage piece about the founder of THQ Nordic / Nordic Games / Embracer Group. And he's still the 20% shareholder, I believe. And like what their strategy is with all these acquisitions and how they manage everything. And it's really interesting. But the thing that came out about it is that they specifically try to acquire games that are smaller, unknown, or past their prime with lots of potential. And the reason that was interesting to me is I think they put Tomb Raider in that last category where it's past its prime, right? Because, you know, it's had a long storied franchise, but I think prior to the most recent trilogy, it definitely had declined quite a bit. But I felt like the last trilogy really was a popular game. I mean, still when I look at graphic benchmarks and stuff for computers, Shadow of the Tomb Raider is often used in those, and it's still a great looking game. So I thought that was interesting, but that's obviously separate because Crystal Dynamics was sold to Embracer a while back, but now this new deal with Amazon to fund and publish the game. So I'll hand it off to you from there. What thoughts did you have on that?
Yeah, so I guess the first thought is, well, they should have a significant amount more money to play with than maybe they did a month ago, before this agreement, you know, was finalized. Obviously, with Amazon's kind of infinite pockets, it seems like these days, and their kind of continuing expansion into media. So that was kind of the first thing I thought. I was like, okay, maybe they can do a little bit more. They can push some of these ideas a little bit further, or they can kind of iterate on things a little bit further, that type of thing, than what they otherwise might not have been able to do. And I know part of the, I don't know if you call it the press release or just kind of the conversation around this announcement, was that one of the developers at the new Tomb, or for the new Tomb Raider game at Crystal Dynamics, is kind of like, well, we still plan to make this kind of the biggest and, you know, the most in-depth Tomb Raider that we've ever made. And I think they've kind of discussed that in the past. Like, that wasn't kind of a new thing. I mean, that was kind of, I feel like maybe a reiteration, like, hey, by the way, we definitely can do this because we have Amazon money now. And I don't know. I mean, I am excited for this game, and we still know nothing about it, essentially. So who knows really when it could come. So in kind of the sense of, or in, I guess, the kind of the idea of, oh, there's going to be another Tomb Raider game, I am excited, and I'm excited that maybe they can do a little bit more now since they all have that added flexibility. But it's, again, it's one of those games where it's just so hard to truly get excited about it when we know nothing about it. And it's probably, I mean, from where we're sitting right now, maybe 2 or 3 years away. So it's cool. I mean, I guess I don't necessarily have an opinion on Amazon one way or the other. I mean, I guess I'm glad they're injecting money into the marketplace versus the Saudi royal family group, or, you know, those Chinese companies. Obviously, I prefer Amazon versus one of those entities kind of wrapping their arms around an IP like Tomb Raider, one that I like.
But now, just to clarify, the Saudis did give some money to Embracer. I believe it was like $1 billion or whatever. So that's, there is true, some Embracer investment in that, but they're not a controlling shareholder.
That's right. I remember reading about that at some point last year. So I don't know. I mean, it's cool. I mean, like we said, I feel like a year and a half ago when they first told us that they were going to try to loop in the old Tomb Raider stories with the new trilogy, like, that idea is cool to me. But it's just hard to get really excited about it when it's so far away, you know?
Yeah.
I'm curious. I don't even know, like, if they could have announced this with some sort of connection to the game itself, you know, like, oh, here are our first screenshots, you know, something like that. But it is what it is, I guess. We'll see.
Evaluate the game on the game itself when it finally comes.
Yeah. So I don't know.
Okay, and the second thing I want to talk about from last week's show, or 2 weeks ago, sorry, is we kind of just did a 2022 wrap up without doing the, like, thing that all the other shows do, which is like, here's our top five of the year, or best game of the year, or game of the year award, or mm-hmm. whatever. Just, I have some thought starters there of like 20 games that came out this year that I know we as a podcast discussed. And really, it's just a question, and it's not even game specific, is when you think about 2022, one, like, what stuck out to you for the year? And that could be games, or that could be, I mean, I think we all had a sentiment of it being kind of a dead year, especially in the middle of the year when nothing came out. And also a year where a lot of games underperformed. So just in general, you know, what stuck out to you for 2022 that you'll remember as what that year stood for, or what it is in your memory?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I feel like you kind of hit it with kind of, it was the year that gaming forgot Redux, because I think there's been a few years like that, maybe in the last 8, 9, 10, kind of since the Xbox One generation kicked off. That's probably rose-colored glasses on my childhood of not knowing as much about games and not having as high of expectations about games. But it does seem like we've had more down years in recent memory than truly great years. But yeah, I mean, I guess the big thing would be kind of the continued trend of either remakes slash remasters or current gen or next gen upgrades, something that we've seen pick up a lot in the last 5 years or so, kind of continued with, you know, at breakneck speed in 2022. Obviously the big ones being Cyberpunk and Witcher 3 at the end of the year, Cyberpunk kind of towards the middle of the year, and then Witcher 3 just this past month.
But we even, I mean, we have coming up in 2023, we have Fallout 4 getting one. We have, it leaked The Outer Worlds is getting one, and Dragon Ball Z Kakarot's getting one, which is out of nowhere. So, mm-hmm. I mean, you're right. There are, it continues. It's good and bad.
Yeah. And I think, also they kind of did that enhancement to Fallout 3, 60 FPS. And I forget if it was 4K up-res or what it was. Not an up-res, but HDR, I think, is they added for that game. So I played that kind of this fall. I played that for a few hours, which was really enjoyable. I mean, it obviously, it's a solid game, one of my favorites. But it's cool. You know, it worked out perfectly, I think, in both of those CD Projekt Red games, because obviously with Cyberpunk, I hadn't finished it. I was waiting to finish it because there was always kind of early on, they announced there was always going to be that kind of next gen update for it. So as it kind of got closer to the end, it was like, okay, where's a good spot for me to kind of pause this and then pick it back up later? And I'm glad I did, because I ended up, you know, beating it with on my Series X here in the last 6 months or so. And I think also similar to that with The Witcher 3, I mean, 7.5 years between original launch date and this update, free update
nonetheless.
Both of these
yeah.
were free, which is really cool. It's pretty crazy. And I think that's a long enough window for most people that it's like, okay, sure, I'll pick this back up and play it again. Now, for me, I had a save that was probably maybe, I don't know, 40% of the way through the main story, we'll say, maybe 50%. And so I kind of just picked that up right where I was, and I've been playing, that's pretty much all I've been playing for the last 2 weeks since it came out, from, you know, the amount of time that I have had to play, which hasn't been a ton. And I've loved it. I mean, it's great. The game already looked really pretty. Obviously it was starting to age, again, being 7.5 years old, that's understandable. But it only looks better now, and really looks like a game that came out a lot more recently than 2015. But yeah, I mean, I guess as far as other things that I enjoyed this year, you know, I really enjoyed Pentiment. Talked about that quite a bit on the show. Thought that was kind of a cool game that was kind of under the radar, and then kind of rose a little bit to prominence at E3, and then kind of faded away, and then kind of came out in November, and it was a solid game. Really interesting story. Game I really enjoyed a lot. Another cool thing I remember this year was the Top Gun Maverick stuff in Flight Simulator. I mean, that was neat. Flying the, I forget what the test jet was from the beginning of the film.
Is it called Dark Hawk?
Dark Star.
Yep.
Yeah, Dark Star. That was neat. I know you guys talked a little bit about Lego Star Wars. I didn't enjoy that one as much. I think Gus liked that game a fair amount. It just felt kind of, it felt like one of those games that was, you know, a mile wide, but then a foot deep type of a thing, where it was, they're trying to do so much and encompass the 9 films in a way. And I think they did a decent enough job. You know, like, I don't think it's a bad game, but I also feel like there was kind of a lot of unnecessary bloat with that game. And that was kind of what steered me away from it. You know, I haven't beaten it. I've only beaten episodes 1 and 2. So I've beaten, you know, 2/9 of the story, I guess. And I barely scratched the surface of that game. It's still installed on my Xbox. You know, I'll probably get to it eventually. And quite honestly, there are quite a lot of games on my Xbox right now where it's like, I've kind of started them and didn't get too far. Like Star Wars, Deathloop is another one. Plague Tale Requiem, I think I'm like maybe a third of the way into, but I haven't touched that game since November, because it kind of came out right before Pentiment, and then I kind of just kind of sucked into that, and then the holidays were here, so I didn't really have a lot of time to play Plague Tale Requiem, but I liked what I played the first few hours, the first few chapters. Definitely felt like it was an improvement, you know, over the first game, which was a great game. We talked about on the podcast that you and I both liked. So, yeah, I mean, there were a few kind of random games I played this year, like the TMNT game, Shredder's Revenge. That game was really fun. I didn't beat it, but I got enough out of it. You know, I played maybe, I don't know, 6 hours of it. Maybe not 6 hours, but that's probably a lot.
I think it got a free update last week. I don't know if it wasn't a next-gen update, but they added something to the game, a new mode.
Gotcha. Yeah. I think there was a decent-sized update at some point recently, so that might have been it. But that was a game that I really liked this year. That was a cool, you know, kind of a fun homage to the 90s TMNT cartoons, which I watched. So that was cool. I'm trying to think what else was interesting this year. I think I did play, I guess I didn't play a ton this year, to be honest with you. I think Forza Motorsport 5 was my most played game of 2022, and that didn't come out this year. So just kind of goes to show you. I mean, I guess Crusader Kings 3 console. I mean, that was a game that came out this year that I've enjoyed, especially of late.
I think True Achievement's year-end wrap-up said that my most played game this year was Far Cry 6, which is hilarious. I think it said I had like 60 or 70 hours in it this year.
I guess I did play a ton of that this year up through the summer. I didn't beat it until the summer.
That we're talking about games that didn't come out this year. Right? Sure. I was just randomly talking about my wrap up. You didn't play. I think yours said you played about half as many games as I did, which sounds about right, because I tend to try a lot more than you do of like stuff that either I know I won't like or I think I might like. It's funny, though.
Right.
There's a lot of stuff that I try that I had no interest in that I end up playing all the way through. And I'm going to talk about that in just a second with games I've been playing, because that directly leads into it. But
yeah. Yeah. I'm looking at the True Achievements thing you were talking about. You played 36 games in 2022 and I played 16. So, but I still had a higher gamer score than you. So there you go. I'm more efficient, I guess, which makes sense. Obviously if I'm playing less games, I mean, I think the only big thing, because I know you've talked ad nauseum about Gotham Knights. You guys talked a little bit about Modern Warfare 2. I think the only other, well, not only other, I mean, there were a bunch of other games that kind of fell by the wayside, both because they weren't going to give you games that any of us were going to play, like Callisto Protocol or Scorn. I think those were two games that were semi-popular this fall that kind of fell on their face, that, you know, had poor reviews. Obviously the big one for us on the podcast that we didn't get to because of poor reviews was Saints Row, which I came really close to pulling the trigger on it during the countdown sale.
Yeah, it was on sale for half off.
As of the time of this recording, is still going, but it'll obviously be over by the time this posts. I almost pulled the trigger on it because it was $30. But I just was like, man, I have too much, because like it's kind of two things. It's like, yeah, I think I said I would pull the trigger at $30 because I said I wouldn't at $40, but I have enough of other things to play right now that it's not like I'm hurting for anything, you know.
Exact same thought I had. It's
and
like
and I feel like it'll be $20 or even less here in the spring,
or it'll be $30 again when I'm ready to play.
Well, that's true.
So I can just wait until,
if it's already $30, you know, 4 months after release, then it's probably going to be $30 baseline pretty soon. So I'll play that game this year. I know I will, just because of my history with the franchise, but I just didn't want to spend $30 on it right now plus tax. Just
it's
enough other things to entertain myself with right now that it's just kind of like I don't need to spend this money.
I want to play it because I like the Saints Row games, but I had the same problem as you did, which is I have enough to play right now. I don't need to add more. But the other problem is this should be a game that I just skip on, because
probably for you, yeah,
I'm going to end up adding more games to my pile in Q1, and I'm trying to be a little more decisive about what I play, because I like to mix big AAA games with indies that I experiment with off Game Pass or that I want because I liked the trailer or whatever. And I need to, the stuff I need to stop playing is AAA games that are bad. Like I sunk a lot of time into Gotham Knights And I'm glad that I did, but that was probably, that one isn't an example of something I should pass on, but maybe Saints Row is, because my limiting factor is time, not having the console, not the money to buy the games. It's time. And I like to go really deep on games, especially, you know, going for 100% completion, or, you know, doing, 100 hour plus games like RPGs and Assassin's Creed games and stuff. So I try to mix that in with more indie type stuff. Like in this last year, I played Nobody Saves the World. And let's see, what else was, nothing else is coming to mind off the top of my head. I guess you could technically say maybe Outriders World Slayer, although that's more of a big game and just a DLC, but you get what I'm saying. Well, I think that's a good cap on 2022. Since you weren't on last year's episode, let's talk about what we've been playing. Although I think you already covered yours, because The Witcher 3 is all you've been playing for the last 2 weeks. Is there anything else you want to highlight before I kind of go into mine?
Like I said, I've been playing The Witcher 3 the last few weeks since that next gen update came out on the 14th of December. And yeah, for the most part, that's all I've played. A little bit of Crusader Kings on console. I did buy the Northern Lords expansion. For some reason, it's weird. Like, so it's on Game Pass, right? So there's a 10% discount for DLC, but not 10% discount for season passes, which I guess I knew that in the back of my mind, but still seems weird to me. Although I wouldn't necessarily have bought the season pass, because I think everything that the season pass covers is already out on PC, and I don't necessarily care about all of it. The next one that'll be out on console, I am going to buy, because it's probably the best of the three expansions that have been released so far. I did play some of that. But just to go back to The Witcher really quick. The game is so good. Like, the voice acting, animations, like the detail of armor and cutscenes, or even just dialogue, that's a big thing. Such a great game.
So I've Gwent. Also
been playing so much Gwent.
So I've also been playing The Witcher 3 after the update, so we can talk about it together, because there's something you brought up to me in a text that I don't have the context of. I mean, I had, like, I don't know, 20 or 30 hours played before the update, and then, you know, now I'm probably, I don't know, back up to another 20 hours after the update. And I've had the game crash either 3 times or 4 times since the update, and it had never crashed before the update. And you shared a similar experience. So it does seem like I'm sure there's going to be a patch for the first, you know, post update bugs that they've caught.
Yeah.
But that does seem to be something that's happening.
That's actually a good point to raise. Yeah. I don't remember there being, I mean, there definitely early on, there were a lot of crashes and bugs, I think, the first year or so of that game.
Yeah. I heard about that, but I obviously didn't play it back then.
Yeah, but there's definitely been some crashes. There's some weird texture pop in and out. Like, just this afternoon when I was playing it, this dirt road looked like an ice road, because it was blue for some reason, like a bright blue color, like the Microsoft Word blue, you know. It's very weird. And then there's also the other thing that happens to me pretty much every time I play it, is like an audio bug where I don't know if it's a conflict between the music and just like sound effects of maybe rain or something, but it's kind of like that, you know, that very stereotypical kind of high frequency noise, basically. And then it goes away if you hit start, not like the menus, but like the, you know, the pause menu. If you hit the pause menu and then go back, it's gone. So I don't know. It's very strange.
I played the first, I don't know, 75% of the playtime I have with the new update. I played with ray tracing on, and then my last 5 hours or so, I have switched to the 60 FPS mode. And the reason I switched is I watched Digital Foundry. I mentioned them a lot on the show. If you don't know, it's a YouTube channel that does deep dives on the graphics and the performance of video games and their updates. So they did their video on The Witcher 3. And although the visual lighting and shadow effects you get from the ray tracing are clearly superior, you actually, on the performance mode, get a slightly higher resolution And most notably, you get a more solid frame rate and way, way lower input latency. And one of the things I was struggling with was I did feel like there was input latency when I was using the high frame rate mode. It wasn't horrible, right? Like, I've experienced way worse on game streaming from, you know, Stadia or Xbox Cloud with a bad connection, but it was noticeable. So I've switched to the performance mode because it's a locked 60 and it has lower input latency. And really all you're losing out on is, I mean, the graphic fidelity is about the same except for the ray tracing effects. And it is true that, like, in an overpass, for example, where it should be shrouded in shadow, it looks more realistic with ray tracing on. With it off, it kind of, like, there's an unnatural lighting to, like, darker areas. But that mostly is in interiors and in cities. And when you're out and about, it's not as big a deal. So I'm currently planning to stay with the performance mode for the rest of my playthrough. Also, ray tracing's great, but we're not to the point where the only game I've experienced where I turned on ray tracing mode and I didn't feel like I was suffering in some way was Doom Eternal. And every other game that I've played, I feel like I'm giving something up to play with ray tracing. And like, I'm playing with 30 FPS or other things turned down that make the experience subpar.
Yeah. So I'm also playing in the performance mode just because I'm kind of agreeing with you. Like, the game looks really good regardless. And I think the difference between higher frame rate to me is a lot more noticeable than ray tracing.
You still, and to be clear to the audience, you still get all the improvements for next gen. You get the higher amount of grass, the higher resolution textures, the better character models, mm-hmm. and everything else. Everything else that was added to the game, you get. Just don't get the ray tracing, and you actually do get a slightly higher resolution because they had to drop the resolution for ray tracing.
One other thing I want to note, and this is gameplay related, all of the free stuff that they've added. I have not found the Netflix inspired stuff yet. I do not know. I have not gotten
it's a
that
mission
yet.
In your quest log, but you have to, I think you either have to be to a specific part of the story, at least that far, or you have to be a certain level.
Do you know if it just automatically adds it to your quest log, or do you have to talk to somebody somewhere?
I think it automatically adds it, but now that you mention it, I don't know. I didn't Google it because I figured I would find it organically and just let it happen.
Yeah. Well, what I was going to say is all the other stuff that they've added for free is all like really underpowered. So it's just like, cool.
Yeah. So, me not having played it this being my first major playthrough, beyond the first 20 or 30 hours, I don't know, like 15.
Probably still going to be overleveled for it. The free stuff that you get that you have to go to the Emperor's Palace to get. So
I didn't even know that was a thing. So, I mean, I knew there was somewhere you had to go to like Yennefer's room or something to go get some stuff.
That's what I'm talking about. So you have to access it first through the main menu. There's like a new menu option that says like rewards, essentially.
Yeah, I did click on that and link my account. Yeah.
Okay, so that stuff that's tied into that was overleveled for. But I was only like level 20 on the save. So
are you using any of the other new features like the over the shoulder camera angle, or nope. I'm using quick sign casting.
No, I changed everything back to the legacy controls just because it's after
muscle memory
and like 150 hours playing the game. I was like, the camera especially, I was like, no.
I did turn the camera back because I prefer the more zoomed out view. I do that on any game that has a close camera over the shoulder like that. That gives you the option. I'm trying to think, there was another game. It was, Ghost Recon Breakpoint. The Wildlands had like a third person full body, like, you know, action adventure view. And Breakpoint at launch had this closer, like over the shoulder view, and I absolutely hated it. And even when they patched it to where you could make it zoom out a little bit in more situations, it still wasn't back to the way Wildlands was. So it was a big change, and it was very annoying. Okay, well, that's I think from me, I don't really have much more to say on The Witcher because I'm sure I'll talk about it again because I'm going to continue playing it, but. I've been playing two other games more than The Witcher 3. So the first week The Witcher 3 update came out, I played a ton, and I still played some this last week, but two other things have surpassed it. So one is Vampire Survivors. I was playing it 2 weeks ago when we talked about it on the show, but I played it a lot more the last week and a half because it turns out Vampire Survivors is the perfect Game Pass game because it plays good on console, it plays good on streaming with a controller, and it plays good on streaming with touch controls. And that is extremely rare that a game is good in all three of those scenarios and works well, especially the touch one. Spencer, this game only has one input. It only uses the left joystick. That's the only button on the controller it uses. So you can play it on streaming on your phone with touch and use the left half of the screen as your joystick, and it works flawlessly. I played this game a ton while I was traveling because anytime I was anywhere, I could just play it. I played it on a Chromebook with an Xbox gamepad with the Edge or the Chrome browser. I played it on my phone with touch, and I played it on my Xbox Series S on a TV, and I played it on my Xbox Series X on a TV. So really loving this game. It is super addictive. It's like one more run, and you're like getting stronger and trying to avoid. When I saw this game, Spencer, this is an example of a game. When I heard all the buzz about this game and I looked at it, I was like, that looks stupid. It looks boring. I don't understand. And then I saw Phil Spencer had like 600 hours played or something ridiculous on his year-end recap on True Achievements. And I was like, what am I missing? And I played it once and I was like, okay, that was fine. Played it twice. Okay, still kind of fine. The third time I'm like, okay, there might be something to this. And then now I'm hooked. And it's so simple yet so deep. And you can like select different attacks when you level up. So like you get a random three choices, which makes it a lot like Hades, but you can pick between those random three choices. So you start, your first person you start with has a whip. And you may get an upgrade for your whip that makes more damage or gives you two whips or something. But then you also might get a magic wand or a thing that throws fireballs. And all of those have strategic benefits and deficits. And so it's this thing where you're moving around the screen trying to avoid all the enemies while your attacks are shooting, but you don't control the attacks. You only control where your character goes. So if the attack is a left-right attack, you have to position yourself to where it hits them left or right. If it's a aimed attack that automatically hones in on enemies, you don't have to worry about the proximity. You just need to worry about evading enemies. So there's a lot of strategy to it. Spencer, you really should try this game just for the experience of the game. It also doles out achievements pretty liberally because they're each only like 5 gamer score. So, you know, I've played, I don't know, 5 or 10, 20, maybe 20 hours. I haven't looked to see what my actual game time is. And I have, you know, 200 or 300 gamer score, I think. But that's a lot of little achievements. So yeah, really like Vampire Survivors. It's also the perfect travel game. Like I said, you can play it so many different ways, and it didn't feel like the lag and the latency you have on mobile through streaming didn't feel noticeable to me on a good connection. So that I found very satisfying. The last thing I want to talk about is High on Life. This is the game I played the most this week. I think 80% done because there's like a bounty, you're a bounty hunter in this game, and I only have one bounty left. So I think I have one bounty and then the final boss. And the humor is definitely what makes or breaks this for people. And I want to make clear, I had no interest in this game when it was announced. I had no interest in this game in the lead up. I had no interest in this game when reviews came out. I can't even tell you why I finally pulled the trigger and downloaded it. But after two missions, I was pretty sold. I talked about it 2 weeks ago. And I don't find it like I'm not busting a gut laughing, but I'm also not like repulsed by the humor. I find it generally funny, and I like that it pokes fun at it being a video game, and it pokes fun at other video games, and it pokes fun at popular culture and Netflix. And it can be a little grating. I could see how people would be annoyed. Some of the jokes are overused. Some of them are very crass. It's very, you know, it's from the guy that made Rick and Morty. So that's the kind of stuff you're getting. But it's just a lot of fun. The talking guns I thought would be annoying. You can actually turn it down in the menu. I haven't needed to turn it down. You can switch between guns and have different guns talk to you. The one that's like active in the story can always talk to you in your ear, so that's not an issue. I mean, it does some really funny stuff. And I want to talk about jokes to like explain how like the kind of humor and the kind of jokes it makes, but I don't want to spoil anything. Like, I just experienced this long segment that was like basically a spoof on a very popular video game franchise that we've talked about on this show. And it does that multiple times. But so I'm glad this was on Game Pass. I would have never played it. And now I'm 10 hours in and I'm loving it. And I'm probably going to finish it tonight. I've got like two bosses left, so I'll probably be done with this by next week's show unless I get derailed tonight and play something else. So yeah, High on Life. The only thing I have negative to say about High on Life is that sometimes the music is really good and sometimes it is the most annoying thing I've ever heard in my life. Okay, that's an exaggeration, but it's bad when I'm noticing the music in the game and I'm like, wow, can I mute that just for this combat encounter? Like certain worlds have certain songs or certain combat encounters have certain like melodies in the background. And some of them are just really annoying. I have the music turned down to like 70%, I think, because it's annoying more often than it's encouraging, which is the opposite of Vampire Survivors, where I find the music to be like, it's got this really cool like tune that really gets you into like do 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 do. It's like this combat tune that I really enjoy, and it's the same tune all the time. So I've heard that for
just did it justice right there.
Okay, well, anyone that's played the game knows that that was an exact rendition of the music.
I want to play High on Life. I do. Maybe in January, we'll see.
I think the reviews were a little hard on it, honestly. I think it's because it's kind of out there and grading that pushed it down a bit. But I'd say it's a solid 8.5 out of 10 games. I'm not giving it that score. I'm just saying generally that's kind of the vibe I get from it, having played 80% of the game. Okay, let's talk about some news. It's obviously January 3rd when you're hearing this, so we took a week off, but it's been the holidays here in the US and many places around the world and different cultures. So not a lot of news. In fact, some of these things I'm like, why did you announce this on New Year's Eve or New Year's Day or whatever? But there is a little bit of news to talk about, but we won't drag any of this out if it's not that interesting. And I put them in no particular order this week. So you're going to get it shotgun style in the order that I put it into our doc. Number one, Payday 3 is coming in 2023. Officially confirmed, they did a little teaser trailer that told you absolutely nothing except for that it's coming in 2023 and it's coming to PC and console. Spencer, did you even play Payday 2?
No. I've never played a Payday game or had any interest. I always thought these games looked kind of silly. This was like the co-op kind of like you and another player bank robbery game, right? Is that what I'm
remembering? Yeah. Yeah, it kind of feels dated, so I'm curious how it'll be updated.
Oh, you know, it's where
like one person like cracks the safe while another person does this and another person does that, and then you're trying not to notify the police.
I remember the first one that I was like, okay, the first one came out in 2011. That makes more sense because I was like, this game feels ancient, but 2011. That makes okay.
And I feel like we knew that Payday game was in development.
Yeah.
We just didn't know that it was coming in 2023. So that's the new piece. And it's now confirmed. I don't know if it was confirmed for consoles previously, but it is now. So
Starbreeze, I don't really have anything more to say. Is who is working on it. I feel like.
Well, and we talked about them when they were acquired. Yeah, they were acquired, I believe. That's the last time we talked about them. And then they had some, I think, employee controversy with like layoffs or something like that. You can dig into it if you want, but I don't know that there's a whole lot to say.
Okay. It doesn't matter.
It's not that interesting.
Oh, they made Darkness. That was an interesting Xbox 360 game.
I will say Payday has a huge following on PC. So it is a big deal that a Payday 3 is coming. I just don't know that it's going to be a big mover on console, which is mostly what we cover here. So I will check it out, though. It's a game that you could see potentially coming to Game Pass, but it would be actually kind of a huge win if Xbox got it on PC Game Pass as well as console, but I don't know that it's big for me. It's a game I would definitely try, but I wouldn't put a lot of time into, but it's cool for that fan base that they're getting a sequel. Cause I feel like it's a strong fan base that will appreciate it if it's done well. So number two, Redfall has a rumored / leaked release date. So according to sources, the original reporting was from Okami 13. Where did that person on Twitter? And then it was confirmed by Windows Central, which is where I saw the story. So check out the reporting on Windows Central, but they're reporting that the rumored target release date is May 2023 for Redfall. And that's the internal target. So that doesn't mean right now that it is coming in May 2023. That just means that's what they're shooting for. So if they feel like they're going to hit that, then we'll probably get an announcement in the next few months. If not, then we probably won't get an announcement till like Q2, and it'll be more of a, I don't know, July, August release. I think May would be a great time for this to come out. We currently don't know a whole lot coming out in that time frame, so I think that would be good.
Although there were, the only thing that to note with this is at one point, I think Bethesda said, or they said that this was coming out before Starfield, which would mean Starfield is at best coming out in June, because they said that's coming out in the first half of 2023.
Starfield's 100% going to be a fall game. It's not coming out till the end of the year. I would bet money on it.
Hang on. I think I just saw something today about their support website going live.
I don't know if that means too much.
Hold on. But it said something about, I wish I could find it. Basically, what I saw was that their support studio had gone live, and on that page, they said, "We're excited to bring you Starfield in the first half of 2023.
Oh, that would be really interesting, because if this is targeting May, and
June is the only other time, unless it comes out.
That would be so weird, though, to back those up month to month when you need to spread out your first party releases kind of over the year and not let them step on each other.
Yeah, well, we've seen that Microsoft doesn't know how to manage their game studios. So
I think they're better than that, though. I don't think they would back to back month release two first party exclusives that are both Bethesda games, both first party, both, you know, like a lot of boxes that overlap. There's many that don't.
Yeah.
By the way, in May, the only two games announced for May right now are The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom, which is the sequel to whatever that other Switch Zelda game was that was really popular. And then Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League, May 26th. So that is a big game. So May would be fine. Did you find what you were looking for?
Yeah, I found the tweet from this afternoon from Clover Isle. That's where I saw it. And it's right.
Clover Isle.
Yeah, however you say that. But help.bethesda.net, it is live. So I don't know where it says the first half of 2023. You probably have to click on a couple things here to get to that page. But
interesting.
Yeah. So I don't know, man. I think you're right. May would be a good date for a game like Redfall, where it's kind of like a new IP that doesn't have the pomp and circumstance like Starfield. So you kind of slide it into a lesser competitive time frame like May. So
Redfall is one I'm interested in, because I'm not sure if I'll love it or hate it, because I've generally liked everything that studio Arkane has done. But there's Arkane and Arcade Lyon, and I never know which one is developing what, but I've liked all the Arkane games regardless. But I'm not really into vampire stuff. So that is a detriment, but it's not really like realistic vampires. It's more of like a cartoony take on vampires with a humor to it. And it's a co-op game. So there's a lot of like, I like this, I don't like that, I like this, I don't like that. So I'm excited to see if I'll enjoy it. It does look intriguing. The initial CGI reveal trailer way back when, I was like, this is probably not for me. Since then, we've seen a lot of gameplay, and I've been like, okay, that looks really good. So I am eager to try this one and see if it's for me. Okay, let's move on. Number three, EA Massive's Star Wars game may be coming in 2023. So let me give you some context on this one. So Julian Garrity tweeted out, "Happy New Year to you all. 2023 is going to be huge for us. Join the adventure. Hashtag massive Star Wars." I forget his job title. He works at Massive. I'm looking him up right now. His Twitter says that he is the creative director at Ubisoft. So I think he's the creative director at Massive Entertainment. So he's saying 2023 is going to be huge for us. So that seems to indicate that either the game would be coming in 2023, or that they're going to do some big announcements in 23 and then the game come in 24, which would be kind of a stretch. The reason this is weird, though, is Spencer, Massive is also developing Avatar Frontiers of Pandora, which is expected or announced and expected for 2023. So this is the studio that previously did Division 1 and 2 and South Park Fractured Butthole. So they've had co-development before, because obviously Division 1 and 2 were back-to-back, and they, during that time, also developed South Park Fractured Butthole. But for them to release their massive Star Wars game and Avatar Frontiers of Pandora both this year seems highly, highly unlikely. So the fact that he says 2023 is going to be a big year for, or a huge year for us with hashtag massive Star Wars, I don't know. That's weird. I mean, he's probably the creative director on the Star Wars game and not on the Pandora game. And maybe they have two teams working on two different games, but it would be really weird to release them both the same year. Thoughts?
Yeah, so, I mean, the Avatar game has been in development for like, will have been in development for 6 years this March, according to Wikipedia. So, and originally it was supposed to come out between April 2022 and March 2023. So that's supposedly, or theoretically, is still possible. So, I mean, I don't know. It's really tough to say. It seems like that they could very easily kind of lay an Avatar skin over the Division, you know? I suppose. But yeah, as far as like the Star Wars game coming out this year, I don't know. It just, how much can you really read into a tweet? You know, social media people kind of screw around like this all the time, and it doesn't necessarily mean a whole lot. That's true.
Yeah, that's why I was saying it could just be he's like, oh, it's going to be a big year because this is going to be the year we reveal the game, right? So it doesn't come out for another year and a half after that. So I honestly think it's way more likely that Avatar comes out this year and Star Wars comes out next year.
I literally said today, I think, I was like, man, wouldn't it be nice if these studios could get their movie tie-in games down to come out when the movie comes out?
Well, it's
now, knowing Avatar, they'll re-release the movie when the game comes out, so that's certainly possible.
Aren't we getting the next Avatar? Is it next Christmas or the Christmas after? Because I know they shot 2 and 3 back to back.
I thought it was a 2 year gap, so I thought it was 2020. No, maybe it was.
I think the first two are 1 year gap, and then it goes to a 2 year gap after that if they do sequels. But
no, Avatar 3 is 2024, so it's 2 years.
So I was not interested in Avatar 6 months ago. My wife kind of dragged me to see Avatar 2 because she's a huge fan, and I actually really liked it. So I'm way more interested in this game. I would say my interest level on a scale of 0 to 10 or 1 to 10 was like a 2 before, and now I'm up to like a 6. So I went from I could care less about this game to I would check it out. I would definitely want to play it, actually, especially if it gets good feedback from people I trust. I'm less interested in Hogwarts Legacy because I'm not
really excited for that.
Yeah, I knew you were, which is why I wanted to kind of throw it in with this, because I did not read or grow up with the Harry Potter franchise. I never read the books. I never watched the movies. So I could care less about Hogwarts Legacy. But I felt the same way about Pandora until I watched that second movie. And I was like, okay, this is actually really good.
Yeah. I'm on the Wikipedia page for Avatar 3, and it's like, it's so crazy. Like, I remember going to the first one in the theater in 2009 twice. I saw it twice, and I just remember that, like, next year when they announced sequels, it was like, oh, 2020 or 2022. And I just remember thinking, like, man, that's never going to happen. We're never going to get to those years. And yet, here we are.
Man, I watched a YouTube breakdown video comparing, like, plot lines of, like, what it means for Avatar 1 and 2. And when they would show footage from Avatar 1 side by side with footage from Avatar 2, it was like the graphics on Avatar 1 look so bad when you put them side by side with what they did 10 years later for Avatar 2.
Yeah, I mean,
sorry, I cut you off there a little bit.
No, it's okay. Yeah, I'm not opposed to seeing it. I don't know. It's not a high priority for me just because I was like, man, I don't remember anything about the first Avatar. I mean, I remember the general plot points and like what happens, but like, all of the minutiae would be completely lost on me without rewatching the movie, and I simply do not want to do that.
I mean, I didn't do that. The movie kind of recaps it for you, and it jumps forward like 10 years, just like real life. So,
well, I guess
there's a gap
fair
enough to make it
palatable.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
anyway,
moving
after
on
to that side tangent.
Number 4, Sifu is coming to Xbox in March of 2023. So this launched as a PlayStation exclusive February 8th, 2022. I mean, obviously it was a 1 year exclusive because it came to PlayStation February 8th and now it's coming to Xbox in March, which is a year and 1 month afterwards. So this was that cool like martial arts arcade game. I don't know what it's not arcade, but arcade style game. It's getting some updates and new modes, I think, as well. Not much more to say about it. I was intrigued by this when it was announced, but since I've kind of softened on it, and after the reviews came out, I was like, maybe this isn't. I mean, I think I would enjoy it. I just don't think I have time for it. So, Spencer, any appetite for Sifu? It's like the martial arts kind of...
I don't even know what this is.
It was announced at some big show and we talked about it, but yeah. I mean, it's another example of an exclusive.
I'm not a brawler player or interested in kind of the martial arts kind of genre of media. I mean, is what it is. It looks kind of cool with these graphics, but no, it's not really my type of game.
Yeah, it's got like a low texture look to it, and you're like doing like martial arts combos and stuff, but I don't know. Looks cool enough, but now it's coming to Xbox a year later, so, but, you know, PlayStation third-party exclusives. But Xbox shouldn't buy, you know, that segues actually perfectly to Activision Blizzard, because that's our next story. This is our Activision Blizzard weekly update, or bi-weekly, since we're 2 weeks from the last show. So two updates since the FTC sued to block the Xbox acquisition or Microsoft acquisition of Activision Blizzard. So first, the day this podcast comes out, Spencer, I'm not sure you saw, but the first pretrial hearing for that lawsuit is the 3rd, January 3rd. So first motions and pretrial whatever will be held, not motions probably, but first pretrial whatever will be tomorrow.
Probably scheduling the real hearings and such.
I think they have the first hearing date scheduled for like August. But we'll see. Maybe, you know, maybe Xbox makes a motion to like throw it out or something. I don't know. But in Xbox/Microsoft's official response to the lawsuit, there were some little nuggets. And one of them was they claimed that Sony blocked Xbox from getting 4 games and used quote unquote exclusion deals. And those are Final Fantasy VII Remake, Final Fantasy 16, which is coming this year, Silent Hill 2, also coming this year, and Bloodborne. It's interesting because those 4 games, that means will never come to Xbox according to Microsoft, which, you know, Final Fantasy VII Remake, we'd always wondered, like, is this ever going to come to Xbox? And there were rumors that they extended a 1-year exclusivity to 2 years. Also with Final Fantasy 16, I thought that there was something mentioned in one of the trailers that it was a 1-year exclusive, but it seems like that might not be the case. I'm not sure how Microsoft would know this information. Maybe publishers told them. And some other stuff like that might have been not released.
Yeah, I remember there being some sort of notation at the time that these would be coming to Xbox eventually. So clearly Sony was like, okay, well, never mind. If they're going to make these acquisitions that we financially can't keep up with. I mean, it is what it is. I mean, a lot of these games, obviously Xbox players at large deserve to play. But for me, it's kind of like Final Fantasy VII Remake, I would have played, but a lot of these other ones weren't, you know, my cup of tea. So it's disappointing, but at this point, I don't really know if it matters anyway.
Yeah, I think it's more just them going back and forth saying this is going to be exclusive and that's going to be exclusive, where right now PlayStation is locking down exclusives and Xbox is publicly stating they're not going to make Call of Duty exclusive, which is PlayStation's main sticking point. I also thought it was interesting that Microsoft has gone kind of on the offensive with the FTC, where they made claims of the FTC's lawsuit being unconstitutional. And they also threw a bunch of arguments in there about how the FTC is really not operating in the role that they're supposed to in protecting consumers. Whereas Xbox is saying, not only are we going to keep these games multi-platform, but we're also going to put them on Game Pass to make them more accessible to more audiences through more ways of paying for them. And FTC is basically protecting the market leader from an innovative third place competitor. But that gets into like politics of what you believe consumer protection is and whether or not you want this acquisition to go through. I think everyone on all sides, except for maybe PlayStation, kind of agrees that we just don't want this to go to someone worse, right? I think if I could know that Activision Blizzard would not be acquired and stay independent, I think I'd be fine with them not being acquired by Microsoft, because I don't really have a horse in this race, a gun in this fight. I don't know what
dog in this fight,
whatever.
You guys had a pretty good discussion about it 2 weeks ago, as far as generally speaking, what the government tries to do, you know, the types of, you know, horizontal versus vertical integration and the types of acquisitions they usually seek to stop, and that Microsoft acquiring Activision Blizzard isn't one of those. Like, it would be if they try to acquire, now Google's a bad example because of how massive they are, but that type of company that is does a lot of software work and a little bit of hardware work. But Activision Blizzard is a video game developer slash publisher. Like, they don't, like, there isn't as much crossover. So it doesn't make a ton of sense from the FTC's perspective.
They did, like, for example, they blocked AT&T from acquiring T-Mobile years ago. Mm-hmm. But then T-Mobile was allowed many years after that to acquire Sprint, because at that point Sprint had become to where they were no longer competitive and would die without support. But that's an example of a horizontal merger, an acquisition rather than vertical, mm-hmm. because that's two competitors. So when you combine competitors, you're taking someone off the market, so there's now less competition. But Activision Blizzard makes video games. There's hundreds of video game makers and studios. Taking one of them off the board, it just so happens that that one makes the biggest video game. But I don't want to talk about this anymore. The second part of the Activision update this week is that Xbox, in their response, confirmed that at least three future Bethesda games will be exclusives to Xbox and PC. They noted that those exclusives primarily played alone or in small groups, and that one of those, or this note is mine, one of those might be Indiana Jones, since we know that game exists, but we don't know which platforms it'll be on, whether it's multi-platform or not. It was redacted in this document, so we don't know what any of these games are called. They're all unannounced, assumedly, but I think one of them still could be Indiana Jones, since we don't know anything except for the fact that an Indiana Jones is in development. They also went into more detail, and I didn't put it in my notes, but they basically said, we have a history of keeping games that are multiplayer on all the platforms that they were previously on, or on all platforms in general. So that's your Elder Scrolls Online, your Fallout 76, your Minecraft Legends, your Minecraft Dungeons, your Minecraft. Like, those are all big multiplayer games that play with other people, so it makes sense to have them on all platforms and support all platforms. And I mean, even after Minecraft was acquired, Minecraft Dungeons shipped on lots of platforms. Microsoft didn't have to do that. It was exclusive. They were under no obligation when that game came out to only put it on, or to not put it anywhere but Xbox. And they put it everywhere anyway. And Minecraft Legends is going to be the same way. So they're clearly drawing a line between games like Call of Duty and Fallout 76 that go everywhere, and games like Starfield and Redfall and Indiana Jones and whatever else that are single player games that are reasons to be on a given platform. And the truth is, multiplayer games live and die by their bringing friends together. And if you're limited by your friend having a PlayStation when you have an Xbox and there's no crossplay and you can't get the multiplayer game on both consoles, you're probably going to buy a game that you can play on both consoles, like Call of Duty or something. So there's not that much room for a ton of exclusive shooters, like, or multiplayer games. Like, Halo Infinite is obviously an exclusive multiplayer game, and Gears of War, do you really want more of those? Like, it's probably eventually going to hurt rather than help. And they've made that statement. But I think this is, I mean, I just feel like Xbox is being very consistent in what they're putting out there. Again, I don't care if this goes through or not. I mostly want it to go through because I don't want the $3 billion financial hit on Xbox's books that will come, you know, money taken away from investment in the studios they already have. And Xbox getting Call of Duty and all of the Activision games on Game Pass is pretty great. Like, especially the back catalogs. If they get all the Activision games from the huge backlog into Game Pass, that's a huge value add, especially for family-friendly games. A lot of old Activision games are very family-friendly. Okay, that's the end of my rant there. Spencer, any final thoughts about these unannounced Bethesda games that exclusive and what they will make exclusive versus what they won't?
I mean, probably Indiana Jones. That's a game that I'm excited about, but much like Tomb Raider, you know, Lord only knows what that game is and isn't. But they kind of made it clear that most of these or almost all the Bethesda games are going to be exclusive. So we'll see.
Yeah. So our final news story this week, and this would be a quick hits if we had a quick hits this week. So let's just say this is the quick hits, is Games with Gold was announced for this month, and it's Iris Falls for the first half of the month. Actually, I'm sorry, they didn't change it, but without the 360 games, these are on a different cadence. The first one goes from the first of the month through the end of the month. So this is January 1st through January 31st is Iris Falls. And then January 16th to February 15th is Autonauts. And I've only heard of one of these two games before the day this was announced. And these are both $20 games. So they're not exactly super expensive AAA level giveaways. Now, on the PlayStation side, for comparison, the free games for January are Jedi Fallen Order. Oh, I clicked on the wrong link. Jedi Fallen Order, Fallout 76, and Axiom Verge 2, which are three large popular games. Now, I feel like Fallout 76 has been given away multiple times on multiple platforms, and it's because I think it was free on Epic Games at one point, and it's also on Game Pass. Jedi Fallen Order and Fallout 76 are also both on Game Pass right now. But just the quality of the free games on PlayStation versus Xbox, it just can't be argued anymore. And you just got to wonder, are they ever going to invest in it, or are they just going to keep letting it be where they send indie games to die? Because they're not even putting indie games in it that are interesting, that people like, you know, want to be breakout hits. It just seems like they're doing stuff that's old, or I don't know. It's just this is why it's the last story of a podcast when it gets announced, is it sucks.
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead. Do you have something to add there?
I feel like we talk about this all the time.
Once a month we do.
6+ months or longer of Games with Gold just being a total afterthought. I like more than half the time, don't even bother checking them, like to like claim them, because it's just like, what's the point? I'm never going to play these games because they're useless. No, not I useless. Don't... I shouldn't say useless. That's extreme. But you know what I mean? Like, they're just, I don't know.
Yeah, I actually, now that I think about it, I'm not sure when the last time there was a Games with Gold that I actually played was. Because there used to be. Like, I used to get stuff that I wanted to play, and I would play it. But I don't think that's the case anymore. I mean, I think technically they gave away Gears 5, like, way after it had been out in 2021.
There's good ones. Like, there have been good ones over the last, I don't know, 7-8 years. I mean, that's how I got Assassin's Creed Syndicate, was through Games with Gold. So there is some good stuff there.
But I forgot about Syndicate.
Needle in the haystack, kind of.
Last year we had a few winners, like Darksiders 3 is a decent AA game. Kingdom 2 Crowns, no, maybe not that one. Tropico 5, but like nothing really great. Resident Evil was in there at one point. I don't know. People were hoping that when they dropped 360 in, what was it, October, that it would increase the quality, but that has just not turned out to be the case. It's fine, though. I'm fine with this. I'm not fine with it, but I don't feel like my money is wasted because I don't have basic gold. I have ultimate, so I'm getting tons of good AAA games in Game Pass. If I didn't have ultimate and I just had gold and I thought that Games with Gold was a selling point of my subscription, if it weren't for needing gold for getting online, I probably wouldn't pay for it otherwise, because the Games with Gold as a selling point is really poor. But we can stop beating this horse because we do this every month. Okay, final thing I want to talk about before we wrap up is, Spencer, it is the first show of 2023. A lot of games were either delayed or are coming in 2023. And we don't need to talk about like our top five most anticipated. But when you think about this year, what are the things that you're most looking forward to? And obviously, both of us and Gus are all really excited about Starfield. So I think that one goes without saying. What else this year has you really intrigued that you just can't wait to get your hands on?
Oh, I mean, I was thinking about this earlier, and I mean, really, it's all stuff in the first little bit of the year between Hogwarts Legacy and Jedi Survivor. I think those are, aside from Starfield, and I'm trying to think if there's anything else obvious that I would say is ahead of those two, but I don't think so. I mean, there's some other things that I think Stalker 2, which we got a trailer for this week, that looks really good. And it's going to be on Game Pass. So, I definitely will play it, I think. And then, like I said, the trailer looked really cool. But I think anything else is kind of just like, yeah, the Assassin's Creed, Mirage. Okay, cool. But Assassin's Creed is Assassin's Creed at this point. It is what it is. It can't really do that much to blow me away. So yeah, I think probably Hogwarts Legacy, because I think it promises to be such a really good, hopefully a really good AAA title. I think there's a lot riding on it being a good game, from that perspective, just after how many delays and kind of letdowns that we had in 2022. So probably Jedi Survivor and Hogwarts Legacy for me outside of Starfield. So
I made a list, and like an idiot I made it in my Twitter drafts, and right now I had the hardest time on the website trying to find out how to get to my drafts on Twitter's website, so I had to pull out my phone. I'm not going to go through my whole list, but definitely one of my most anticipated is Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League. My only like reason I'm not my most anticipated is I'm not sure if the gameplay being playing as the Suicide Squad instead of Batman is going to be as good. I know I'm going to enjoy the world. I think having the Justice League as the villains is really cool, so I'm excited about that. There's also DLC, obviously, Cyberpunk 2077, Phantom Liberty. That's going to be really exciting this year. Hopefully a big DLC like The Witcher 3 got.
Oh, yeah, so I forgot about that. That's a good call.
Like a full game size thing. Star Wars Jedi Survivor. Jedi Fallen Order was one of my favorite Star Wars games of all time, which is saying a lot, but I just really loved the style of that game and the gameplay. So a sequel for that has me really amped. We already, you know, Starfield, obviously a couple. Yeah. You're,
I was just going to say something I randomly thought it was, Company of Heroes 3. If that comes to console this year,
it is four. Yeah.
If that comes to console this year though.
Oh yeah. You're right. We don't know if it'll come. And then there are some things also on other consoles like Spider-Man 2 on PlayStation. I'm really excited about, Assassin's Creed Mirage. You already mentioned, I'm really excited about that one because it's going to be, you said it's going to be more of the same, but I'm wondering if it won't be, because this is supposedly going to be the return to like a smaller scale Assassin's Creed game. Imagine, you know, a smaller scale game like way back, you know, 6, 7, 8 years ago, but with modern graphics, modern technology, modern rendering effects, modern frame rates, like a 60 FPS Assassin's Creed game. We haven't had that in the old style games. I think they were all 30 FPS. And so it could be, you know, a lot of different, especially if it's not, you know, gear based and all the things that the modern trilogy of RPGs have been. So I think that's really exciting. And then that Pandora, Frontiers of Pandora Avatar game has jumped up on my list now too, because, like I said earlier, I'm more interested in Avatar than I was previously, which makes me want to try that game. What's the game I was talking to you about before we started recording, Spencer, that is, it's coming to Game Pass. It's, an alternate history, Russia.
Atomic Heart.
Yeah. Atomic Heart.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. That one looks kind of interesting.
It wasn't on my radar until I found out it was FPS alternate history. And I guess that just totally flew by me. I thought it was kind of a single A, double A kind of rough game. I hadn't seen a whole lot about it. And it just, I guess, flown right over my head. When I heard it was alternate history and kind of some of the more details about it, I was like, okay, that sounds cool. So it all depends on the execution. That's obviously coming from a studio that, is based over in Eastern Russia or Eastern Europe and Western Russia and dealing with all that fallout and stuff. And I think, but it could be cool. So that is interesting. I'm more, I guess, excited for 23 because I know some stuff was delayed. So hopefully a bunch of that's going to come out. And it's sad, but it feels like every year we get away from 2020, our chances get better, right? Because we had so much delayed during the pandemic and so much was thrown off that it just feels like the farther we get away from it, the more likely we are to start getting more polished games that don't suffer from kind of, I don't know, the stink that we kind of had this year of letdowns, just games that clearly lacked polish or lacked, you know, bug fixes or whatever, like Saints Row underperformed, Gotham Knights underperformed, and multitude of others. And I think that that could change.
Yeah.
So
I don't know. I'll believe it when I see it with these delays and kind of subpar performance. Like you said, it gets more annoying the further we get from 2020, but I don't know. I guess keeping your expectations low so that you aren't disappointed is the way to go forward until proven otherwise.
Yeah, and I guess also realize that not everything has to be a 9 or 10 out of 10 to be fun, right? Like, High on Life actually didn't get great review scores, but I'm super, super enjoying it, and I don't know why that's the case, but review scores are not the end-all be-all. They just are kind of an indication of the quality of a game, but they're subjective, and they're based on, you know, a number system that's flawed, and everybody rates things differently. So there is no true, like, objective metric. And that's why I like Game Pass. I like being able to try things that I wouldn't normally try. And I know a lot of people feel the same. But as my voice is starting to go, we'll wrap up this first episode of 2023. Hopefully next week we'll be back with all of us in the same podcast, since I've been alternating between Gus and Spencer due to all the travel and work accommodations. Gus having two jobs makes it really hard to record because a lot of days he works both jobs, which is intense. Gus is killing it out there. So Spencer, any final thoughts?
Nope. I think you nailed it.
Okay. Thanks for listening. I'm Tim Shelton. You can follow me on Twitter at Tim Shelton.
I'm Spencer Rain. You can follow me on Twitter at Makes It Rain.
See you next week.
New episodes post every Monday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern. You can contact us on Twitter at MultiformPod or by email at questions@multiformpodcast.com. If you enjoyed our show and you're feeling extra generous, please share it with your friends or on social media. You can subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or anywhere you listen.